Off and rolling Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025 is the date. Welcome in. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at @Kuhn71. Alongside, as always, executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at @CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
It's going great because we're one day closer to seeing Creed.
Oh, my God. I'm so hyped up for Sunday night.
I am very excited.
I'm trying to compartmentalize because my excitement may not help me get through the week. I'm really hyped up, though. I wish it wasn't on a Sunday, though, Connor, I will say. I wish it wasn't on a Sunday. Now, we are having some ticket giveaways. I'll mention it
right now.
I'll mention it later in the show as well. But go to 929ESPN.com, sign up, and you could be a lucky winner of some Creed tickets coming up on Sunday. So you can listen to Higher. We could get some One Last Breath in. Now, you may want to call off on Monday. I won't be calling off on Monday if you want to drink some alcoholic beverages. But it'll be a fun time. It'll be a fun time. We already have a babysitter lined up, so we're all set. We're all set there, Connor. You're going to be there, though, too?
I'm going
to
be there.
We're going to have to...
My tickets are secured.
Do you have any plans before? We can talk about it off air so we don't bring it on air.
Not at the time.
Okay. We'll
maybe a few beverages.
Yeah, we'll get together on that. And we'll have a full review on Monday.
Yes.
A full review on Monday. We have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're on day three of reacting to Memphis getting denied by the Big 12. Even with that no-risk, unbelievable $200 million offer, they still were denied membership. We're getting reactions. We're getting reasons why. I want to break through them even a little bit more. We'll open on overreaction, not an overreaction, and get into that. Memphis basketball conference schedule pairings have been announced. So we know who they're going to play twice, who they're going to play only at home, who they're going to play only away, although it is the American Athletic Conference, so I wouldn't hold your breath on a whole bunch of breakdown when it comes down to sort of how the schedule is actually going to play out. I think the out-of-conference schedule will get everybody more excited, and we already know about that. We're going to bring back at 5:30 trip around the NFL. Because all 32 teams are now participating in training camp. I think my favorite thing through the first couple of days, Connor, is Mike Vrabel press conferences are as back as they ever have been. Right? He's going after reporters for asking redundant questions already, as the Patriots head coach.
I saw that clip.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It was amazing.
Oh, it's awesome.
It was so good.
It's great. We also, speaking of the Titans, Cam Ward had a clip or a soundbite when he was asked about his reaction to Will Levis's season-ending surgery and injury. And he did not really show a whole bunch of support for Will Levis in that moment, but we'll talk about that once we get to trip around the NFL. As far as guests are concerned, we'll bring on David Cobb at 5 o'clock per normal from CBS Sports, and then 6 o'clock, Jason Munns will join the program, Tiger Basketball Beat Reporter. We have a lot to discuss with him. Including but not limited to Big 12 in Memphis, Sincere Parker's arrest. And then there's some recruiting news. Some positive, we'll try to put a positive spin on it, a little bit of positive recruiting news out there. And it seems like Penny Hardaway is trying to dip back into the high school recruiting realm, which I don't think is a bad move, considering the lack of continuity year to year that this team has had when diving into the transfer portal head first. But without further ado, let's go ahead and do what we do on a Wednesday. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe, we're looking for answers as to why the Big 12 passed yet again on the University of Memphis. This time, as we've discussed, very clearly different. Memphis put an offer of $200 million with an out clause in 2031 for the Big 12. Shehan Jayaraja of CBS Sports joined Sports 365 and gave an effort at an explanation. Here's what he had to say. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, now this is going to ruffle some feathers, but this is not an overreaction. Now, I will say Shehan, I think, did a great job. This is one of the most level-headed explanations I have heard from somebody that may be in the know about the Big 12 and why they denied membership to the University of Memphis. I do think, while it's a fair criticism, it misses a little bit of context. There's a little bit of context missing because I think when you look at the history of this athletic department, the investment in basketball has been so severe and so loaded that football missed out for a long, long period of time. Now, they've been to 11 straight bowl games. That's awesome, and that's great. But that is, in the grand scheme of an athletic department, a short spurt of great success. we can be honest about it. But if we dig back into the 90s and the early 2000s and R.C. Johnson and Shirley Raines sort of having their say over the athletic department at the University of Memphis, it was so skewed to basketball that football missed out. We remember the great Tommy West rant at the end of a season when he was almost out. He said, until you get investment into this program, it's going to continue to be middling, if not bad. And until about 2012, 2013, when Justin Fuente was hired and Tom Bowen came in as the athletic director, the investment remained the same in basketball. There was not a focus on football. Once you invested in football and you saw what it could be, I think that a lot of the corporate donors, a lot of the people behind the scenes that give money to the University of Memphis have done so, and they've done so at a very high level. Look no further than the news from earlier this week. So I think when you look at the context of the reason Memphis has had this short spurt of success and not this long, outstanding level of success, at least on the football field, it's because of the way the athletic department was run in the 90s and the early 2000s. I think they have flipped that on a dime. They have changed the script. They have done it the right way from about 2012 forward. But that does not erase all of the issues that they had in the past. And we have gotten to a point now, and I don't know why we have to do this every time the Big 12 says no to the University of Memphis, Connor, but we've gotten back to the point where people are calling for a full investment, buy in, make basketball king yet again. And I just can't really get behind that. That's the reason we're in this mess in the first place. That's the reason that the University of Memphis has not been able to get over the top into a power conference, is because all of that investment in the 90s and the early 2000s was skewed to basketball, and football got crumbs. And I can give you examples from even when I was on campus, when I think the switch had already been made with Tom Bowen and Justin Fuente. I used to stay at Carpenter Complex, for example. This will show you the investment. It's a small scale. I have more examples, but I stayed at Carpenter Complex. And for football players, we all stayed together, four people, to an apartment-style dorm, right? That's what it was. And it was fine. It was great. You had the kitchenette. You had the living area. You had two bathrooms. Normal, solid living space. But whenever we went to go visit Austin Nichols and Shaq Goodwin over at their places in Carpenter, in the exact same complex, you know what they had? They had a two-story house. They had a movie room. They had three bathrooms. They had completely different sets of circumstances. When we talk about the facility, the Lori Walton facility, that was built. And when I was coming on campus in 2013 and trying to be swayed to come to the University of Memphis, we were told that the indoor football facility was going to be built by the time we were done. That was not the truth. They built the Lori Walton facility, even though the facility that Memphis basketball had previously was solid. So the level of investment in basketball has always been way too skewed. And since about 2012, it's gone in the correct direction. There's more money and resources given to football. So I would argue that since about 2012, it's pretty consistent investment across the board in the athletic department, even from the corporate donors, as opposed to what Shahan is saying. But I do agree historically with his premise. And I do believe that the Big 12 definitely takes that into account.
I think the biggest point that he made that I agree with, because I understand what he was trying to say, I do think it lacked a lot of context, which, to be honest, is difficult to have if you're not local.
Yes, that's the thing.
Like the ownership.
I don't blame him for not having the full context of the situation.
Like the ownership of the Liberty Bowl, I think, is a big deal, but that just recently happened. Like, a lot of the investment that Memphis has made that has been so positive is recent investment. I think the biggest point that he is making is it feels like the time they needed to do this was 2021.
Correct.
And they didn't do it then. So now, it's what Jeff was talking about yesterday. You're trying to get the last chopper out of Sega, and they're just gone. Those choppers are gone right now. You're trying to buy yourself into a conference when conferences were really expanding, when you had a real opportunity to do it, you weren't ready to
do it
yet.
Those checklist items weren't there for you.
And that is why I think having somebody like Ed Scott leading the charge now is such a big deal, because his priority is getting Memphis into a better conference, making sure that the investments are going to where they need to go in the University of Memphis across the athletic department, not just to one sport. And that is the way Memphis is going to get into a better conference, is they have to be better across the board. It's not just about basketball. It's not just about football. It's about sports across the board. In my opinion, football is the biggest factor, then it's basketball, and then those other sports. But if you are only good at one sport or only good at two sports, that's not going to be attractive. You've got to show a consistent investment into your athletics across the board over a long period of time. And again, Memphis has made some very, very good investments, some amazing strides in this in the last few years, especially since Ed Scott's gotten on campus. But I think the point that he is making that I 100% agree with is the time to have done it was 2021, yes. And they weren't doing it.
Hence
then.
His statement, which is probably the most, again, like with you, I agree with the most. They have not been as proactive as other programs that have made that jump. They've been more reactive.
Right. And
that doesn't mean that the steps aren't being taken.
Exactly.
They've been taken, but a year or two too late every single step of the way.
Memphis has been doing this for a while now. They've really turned around their athletic department, most notably football. I think that we can all agree with that. We all remember the early 2000s. We all remember that there were conversations about whether or not Memphis should even have a football program. I was alive and reading those articles in the paper. I remember those conversations. And like you said, for over a decade now, there's been real steady investment. It's just, it wasn't enough yet to be able to get where you want to go. I think that we've gotten to the level now where it probably is enough, but unfortunately, realignment isn't happening like it was a few years ago. If Memphis was making the investments they are now, and they had the ownership of the Liberty Bowl, and football and basketball were where they were, if we could just go backwards and say, okay, everything that Memphis is now is what it was in 2021, they probably would have gotten in somewhere, but it wasn't.
They missed the boat,
unfortunately.
The truth of the matter is, power conference commissioners, when you step to the table and ask for membership and want membership, they want the things that they want right then. They don't want you to say, oh, we'll get that done in a couple of years, which is what Memphis has done for the most part,
right,
in trying to get to a bigger conference. That's hence the proactive versus reactive conversation. I do believe they have been more reactive than proactive in trying to get to a bigger and brighter future.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but I do believe it is the truth. I will say also, and we're going to talk about it, I don't think that sort of fact is the only reason they have been left out of the Big 12 or a power conference at this point.
Right. It's very clear that there are a few different reasons Memphis was left out. Some of it they can control, some of it they can't control. Let's talk about one next that they could control. Memphis basketball's history of dysfunction and NCAA issues is a limiting factor in conference realignment for the university. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Guys, not an overreaction. And I know people try to avoid this conversation.
Dang, my bad.
Yeah, I know people try to avoid this conversation all the time. They just do. It's hard to criticize a program that has brought so much good to this city that was, before the Grizzlies came along, king of the city. Like, the biggest names and the biggest figures came from that Memphis basketball program and the Final Fours and the national championship appearance in 08. Like, we remember that. And the fond memories don't go away, and you want to get back to that point. But the truth of the matter is, whether it's Penny, whether it was Cal in the early 2000s, whether it was Larry back in the day, there is an underlying dysfunction that this basketball program has always had. Now, again, all of these reasons we put out are not the only reason that they were skipped over by power conferences or the Big 12 in particular. They're just sort of ideas that lead, you know, if you're doing a pros-cons list, that's how this works out. This would be on the con side of that list, mm-hmm. and a limiting factor into why Memphis can't get into a power conference. But there is an underlying dysfunction with this basketball program. When you look at even Penny Hardaway's tenure, you've had academic integrity NCAA violations. You had recruiting NCAA violations on multiple occasions, whether it was James Wiseman or the impermissible sort of calls and everything else that Penny Hardaway did that led to the 3-game suspension not too long ago. You've had multiple arrests as well. Mikey Williams was a recruit for you. He had assault with a deadly weapon. Just recently, you have Sincere Parker with aggravated assault on his supposed girlfriend. So, like, and that's alleged. I'm not saying he's guilty of anything. I'm just saying that's alleged. Like, all of these things add up, and you look at member institutions in the Big 12, and they don't necessarily want that in their backyard. They don't want the NCAA sniffing around member institutions in the Big 12. That's not a good look for them. We don't want to approach this conversation because of the fond memories we have of the program, but the truth of the matter is, with all of the dysfunction, I don't know if success has been there either. There's been one tournament win under Penny Hardaway in seven seasons with all of this dysfunction. Now, I do believe Ed Scott and Tim Duncan have it under control for the most part. At least that's what I hope. But you can't deny that basketball is, to a certain extent, the dysfunction surrounding it, the NCAA issues, that has to be a limiting factor. I'll just give you a smaller example. If I'm running a football team and a guy ran for 2,000 yards and has had some success, but then that offseason he hits his girlfriend, he cheats on tests, he gets in trouble with the law on multiple occasions, like, and I go to recruit him, do I want him? Yeah, there's a reward for taking him in. Just like there's a reward for Memphis basketball being in the Big 12. Better matchups, it's a brand. Penny Hardaway is one of the most recognizable figureheads in college basketball. So there are some rewards to bringing Memphis basketball into the Big 12. But going back to my example, if you have all of that baggage, do I trust you not to be a problem by the time I let you in on the team, into the conference, that type of thing? So, like, just put it on a smaller scale. Put it on a smaller scale. If you have someone who maybe you're just trying to hire him at a consulting firm, I don't know. If they have a bunch of baggage, a bunch of drama away from the workplace, you don't necessarily want to take a chance on that person. You don't necessarily want to put yourself in business with that person. You want to be careful. You want to tread lightly. And I think that is one of the limiting factors that the Memphis athletic department has right now when trying to take that step into the Big 12 and into a power conference.
Yeah, and I do think, again, more additional context is needed with this conversation. Recently, it's been a lot better for the University of Memphis and Penny. I think that we can agree with that. It has been better the last two seasons specifically, but there is baggage there. And to be honest, I don't really put Mikey Williams or even Sincere Parker at the foot of Penny and that program. They can't control what players do. That is, to be honest, that's an unlucky thing. There's nothing that they could do to have prevented that.
It's still attached.
It's still attached to you. But I want to be clear that we're not putting blame on Memphis or that basketball program for what happened. It is just they are a part of that program, and that is part of the conversation when you talk about Memphis. I do think that you need a few years of a clean slate to be able to take to these conferences and say, there's been no issues with the NCAA in a few seasons. And unfortunately, Memphis hasn't been able to do that. Now, I can already hear people saying right now, well, what about this school? What about this school? What about this school that may already be in the Big 12? Yes, those schools may also have some issues with the NCAA. They also might have some issues with players. But the thing is, they're already in. Those guys are already in. We're trying to get in. To get in, you have to have a resume in which the rest of those schools can't look at it and say, here are some cons. You got to take away as many cons as possible. And I think that Penny and Ed Scott and that basketball program have done a really good job of trying to turn the tide with some of these things with the NCAA. We got to give them credit there. Yes. It is going in the right direction. I believe that we are headed toward not having any more issues with the NCAA. Penny has even talked about he had to learn a lot of lessons. He said that he didn't know what he was doing necessarily when he first became a head coach in D1 basketball. There were a lot of things that he didn't know. He didn't know what he didn't know, but he knows what he doesn't know now. I believe that if you have a few years of a clean slate with the NCAA and not having anything pop up that you can control, that is going to help Memphis get into a better conference.
Yes.
If we sat here and pretended as if Memphis basketball and all the NCAA infractions of the last few years didn't matter, we'd be lying to you. We'd be lying to you because here's the thing. We know people. We know people that were involved with the situation. We know that Memphis and the NCAA was a factor because it was every single year for a while. There was a lot going on. There was a lot going on with Memphis and the NCAA. And Big 12 schools, you know what they don't want? The NCAA in their backyard. Because if they're looking at Memphis, you know what they might say? Might as well look at these other schools too. They don't want that to even be a possibility. So we're not sitting here saying that Memphis has some issue and that they've been terrible. They are on the right track. They're doing what they're supposed to do. I still believe in Penny. I certainly believe in Ed Scott. I think that this basketball program can get out of this dysfunction. I'm hoping that the Malcolm Dandridge thing and the academic was the last of it.
Yes.
And to be honest, that was small scale. It wasn't a huge deal.
Yeah, it wasn't a big deal.
Slap on the wrist for the most part.
And a lot of these things have been very, very minimal. It's a 3-game suspension here and a couple of years of probation here and a tiny little fine here. Like, that's what it's become. But They stack up.
They stack up.
When
that's,
you have
that's
your
the
name
point.
In bad attached to bad news on a consistent basis, that's the perception of you for better or worse. That's
right.
People's reality of who you are as a program. And you can't necessarily outrun that. Just like, you know, the city of Memphis. That's another thing that we've been fighting against. Perception of the city of Memphis. Stephen A. Smith. And maybe that's a limiting factor why the Big 12 is not wanting to extend membership to the University of Memphis. There's certain things about perception that you can't outrun. You just have to change them for the better,
yeah,
little by little.
Well, last night, this is an example. You know, I was watching The Birdcage, and Gene Hackman in The Birdcage has a quote where he says, people don't read stories, they read headlines. They're reading the headline about Memphis. They're not reading the story. And in the headline, it keeps saying Memphis NCAA.
Yes.
So when you stop having headlines that say Memphis and NCAA, it's going to help.
Yes, 100%.
It's as simple as that.
I'm going to tell you a truth out there. And I want you to hear me on this and understand that this is the truth. When it comes to basketball or football being the issue, when in regards to getting to a power conference, getting to the Big 12, football is not the issue. You may not take me at face value. I'm telling you, from good authority, football is not the issue. Football has kept their nose clean. They've been to 11 straight bowl games. They're 5-2 against Big 12 opponents. They could be competitive by the time they got to the Big 12. And I think basketball would too. But the basketball dysfunction and the view and the perception of that program from the outside looking in, that, if we're talking about those two programs stacked side by side, and I'm not trying to pit them against each other. I know other people try to do that on a consistent basis. I'm telling you, basketball is more of the issue for a Big 12 than football is.
And we're not talking about success on the court. I think that Memphis, if they got into the Big 12 for basketball, would be highly successful. There's no question about that. It is about the NCAA stuff. You need to have a clean slate. You've got to have a couple of years of that. And again, Penny is doing a good job of that now. Ed Scott's doing a great job of that now. They clean house. They're getting rid of issues. But that is a factor. And if we sat here and said it wasn't, we'd be lying to you.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. All right. According to the Daily Memphian, the Grizzlies' lease will not be renewed this summer, a time period that Memphis Mayor Paul Young was the expectation. This conversation will continue until they have a firm answer on the Grizzlies in Memphis. The Grizzlies leaving Memphis should be a real concern. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
I know Paul Young said that the lease would be renewed this summer and they'd figure it all out. I'm going to still say overreaction. I know we're going past the date that Paul Young set, but they have a lease through 2029. They have some time to negotiate a new lease. And if you read the Daily Memphian article, it's more about the sort of wording of the lease. I also think the Grizzlies want a little bit more of a pseudo-entertainment district down on Beale. They want some assurances that crime will be figured out, that there'll be a bigger police presence on game nights, things like that, that it could be safer. I'm not going to push a panic alarm yet. I'm not going to lose my mind over this. We haven't heard word one, and we don't hear words from Robert Parra. I completely understand that, but you would hear some type of murmurs out there that the Grizzlies were trying to leave town. They're, you know, the city and the state are starting funding into renovating FedEx Forum. It seems like everything outside of the lease agreement being agreed to is heading in the right direction. We just have to see that happen here in the next year or so, and I think we'll be pretty comfortable. But I think this is an overreaction. I'm not going to lose my mind. I'm not going to be overly concerned about the Memphis Grizzlies relocating.
It's something to keep an eye on. It's something to raise an eyebrow at, but I don't think it's something to be truly concerned about yet. When you actually read the story and you talk to some people around the city, it sounds like that the lease agreement has been delayed, which is unfortunate. But I asked around, I asked some people that work in those offices, and I said, is there any real concern that the Grizzlies are going to leave? And they told me not yet. There are some things business-wise that have caused it to be delayed that a lot of people just don't know about. So I'm going to hang my hat on that for now. When the people in those offices start becoming concerned,
yes,
that's when I'm going to become concerned. Now, that being said, I do think that the Grizzlies kind of need to look themselves in the mirror right now. They got what they asked for from the state. They got what they asked for from the city. I know that they want downtown to be some hub, but to be honest with you, that's not just going to happen overnight. You can't just snap your fingers and all of a sudden,
yeah,
Beale Street's completely clean and renovated. We also know that part of this money is going to go toward that. I think for all of those things to happen and for what the Grizzlies want to happen, they need to go ahead and agree to this lease so that can be that can begin moving forward now.
Yeah.
Part of me is a little frustrated with the Grizzlies. This deal should have been done. They got what they asked for, and to be honest with you, Robert Pierre has enough money to where he doesn't need more.
Yeah.
All right. So the city of Memphis and the state of Tennessee gave you what you asked for. You agreed to the deal, signed the damn lease.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, as far as Beale Street and the area surrounding FedEx Forum being better and safe, I think some of the renovation money probably, if we're being real, if you want that to become a reality, needs to go to that.
It is.
That
it is.
Needs
it
to
is,
go to
it
that.
Is, it is planned
and,
to go there.
And
yeah.
we'll see how that all works out. I mean, looking back at what Beale used to be, like in my college days, leading up to really the pandemic, it really is night and day. The difference on a game night of what Beale is, foot traffic, people going into all the local businesses and otherwise.
Every weekend we were on Beale Street.
It's a bit depressing.
Yeah.
It is a bit depressing. Well, but the truth of the matter is the pandemic did so much to change our outlook on everything.
Agreed.
And I think that really, it took a toll on every business and every person in the city during the pandemic on Beale. It was a tough time that I don't necessarily think we're fully over yet. And I don't know if we'll ever be over it. I hope we can get back to where we once were with Beale Street and everything else, all the thriving businesses down there. But it's just hard for me to imagine since, you know, the past 4 or 5 years since the pandemic, it's not what it once was.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much more momentum for the city of Memphis as a whole. And Beale Street before the pandemic happened. And it is unfortunate that it does feel like that got put on pause or even went backwards a little bit, because there are some businesses that have not been able to be viable on Beale Street since the pandemic and everybody kind of got back out there. And that, I think that's absolutely a factor, and it would be nonsense to say that it wasn't. And because when you and I were in college and Memphis football was rolling and you had Memphis basketball and you had the Grizzlies, everything was rolling. Beale Street was a hub. It was every single weekend, you know. We were going to games on weeknights. We were going to games on weekends. And then you go to Beale Street, and it was packed. Every bar, packed. And, you know, I've been to Beale Street a few times in the last few years, and it's just on weekends, big weekends. And it's not the same. When you had, to be honest, the last time I really felt that was when the Grizzlies were back in the playoffs. That's another thing. I don't want to really hear about, you know, let's have some success on the court. All right? Let's maybe have a playoff win before we start turning to the city and saying, you've got to be better.
Yeah,
hey, Grizzlies,
that's true.
Maybe you need to be better too.
And also holding Beale Street's, you know, lack of success, I guess, against the city of Memphis and its citizens since the pandemic, it just seems kind of low to me. It seems kind of tough. There are businesses that had to shut their doors that people loved. There are a lot of people that have been chased off by a little bit of crime that happened, a fair amount of crime and shootings that happened on Beale at the end of the street. Like, it's tough to place a really horrible time in Beale Street's history directly on the people of Memphis. I don't think that's fair to do.
But yeah, let's win a playoff series.
That's true. That's very true. All right, now we need to go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, Memphis basketball has their conference schedule pairings. They have been announced. We'll get to those next, as well as some other news right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM. Memphis basketball's conference schedule pairings have been announced. We don't have dates, of course, but these are just the pairings and who they will be playing during their conference slate. What we have, two meetings, home and away, with UAB, Florida Atlantic, North Texas, South Florida, Tulane, and Wichita State. They will also have six standalone games, either home or away. The three at home will be Charlotte, Temple, and UTSA, the three on the road, East Carolina, Rice, and Tulsa. So, like, I think the one-off games are about as easy as you could possibly get. Charlotte, Temple, UTSA, East Carolina, Rice, and Tulsa are going to be absolutely miserable on the basketball floor this year, just like they are just about every year. But worth noting, it feels like the two meetings are against the toughest teams in the conference. UAB, Florida Atlantic, North Texas, South Florida, Tulane, and Wichita State. I mean, this is like, I know the AAC we make fun of and we go after and we talk about how bad of a conference it is. If we're sort of just talking about schedules and how tough or how easy a conference schedule is in the American basketball season, this is probably one of the toughest that will be out there. And it's for the University of Memphis, who, of course, won the conference outright last year and won the conference tournament. Now, I'm going to ask this question, and it's sort of copy and paste every time we get this news every year. If we're predicting right now which home game in conference is going to be the biggest crowd, where would you point at this particular moment? Obviously, we'll see how teams play in the out-of-conference, and that dictates a whole lot. If a team is undefeated and they're out-of-conference and comes into the FedEx Forum as a top 25 team, things change. But if you're predicting right now which game or games could be the biggest crowds at FedEx Forum, where would you point?
I think USF.
USF,
there's,
I think,
because
so.
There's been a lot of conversation about they could be the team to knock Memphis off the top of the conference. I mean, we were talking to David Cobb here in just a little bit.
He has them as the one bit out of the AAC.
Very high on USF. So I would say probably USF if there's a conversation about they could be the biggest threat to Memphis. But then I think that the obvious answer after that would probably be Tulane.
Okay, Tulane, because of all the returning guys, Brumbaugh coming back. They have some bigs coming back. Obviously, every year, UAB, because of the historic supposed rivalry that a lot of the older fans grasp onto, that could be a good home game. But I think I'd lean your way as well. South Florida and Tulane, because I think they'll get up and down. They'll play a more fun style of basketball, and I think they'll be solid. They'll be two of the top four teams in this conference when it's all said and done on the basketball side.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that those will probably be the top three teams in the conference. And then North Texas, they just play an ugly style of basketball, so they're not very exciting. And then FAU's just, the appeal for them is out the window now. And then Wichita State, they're kind of a name brand, but not really anymore. So people sometimes show up for those games. But I think that the big draws will be South Florida and Tulane.
Yeah, but again, I think every time, whether it's football, basketball, women's basketball, every time we see the conference slate, there is this onset of a bit of depression, especially with the news we had that came out on Monday.
Dude, I can't lie.
There's just always a bit of depression, and I think a little bit more considering what this week has been and what we've been reacting to.
Man, the 1-2-3 of Memphis doesn't get into the Big 12 after offering $200 million. Then that dumbass conference change, name change, and soar the eagle. And then you look at the schedule, you're like, oh, my God.
We can date it back farther than that, though.
Just get us out of this conference.
We can also date it back farther than that, right? At the beginning of last week, NCAA academic integrity, Nolan Smith leaves.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking, specifically conference
stuff.
No,
I'm just saying, but, just for the University of Memphis basketball team. You had that, then you had Sincere Parker arrested, then you had what you mentioned.
Oh, and Dane Danger's waiver not getting denied. It's been Nolan Smith. It's been a tough offseason.
Let me ask this question, because we have gotten used to tough offseasons, and I think under Penny Hardaway, there's been a few of them. We understand that. Has this been the toughest offseason from a news standpoint for that program?
I don't think so. The way I'm looking at it, these are kind of like paper cuts. There's, you know what I mean? Like the NCAA thing, the academic, ended up kind of being a slap on the wrist. The Sincere Parker thing is serious and needs to be taken seriously. There's nothing Memphis can really do.
There are paper cuts, but when you have eight paper cuts on the same hand.
That's my fear. Is I feel in the past there's been bigger things that have happened, but not as many.
Right.
My fear of this one is, could this be death by paper cuts? Because when you just look at it and they're laid out, you say, okay, this has been a rough offseason for Memphis, but you can overcome it. There is some worry, I think, heading into the season, but I think, to be honest, when you found out P.J. Haggerty wasn't coming back, and we always knew that Dane Danger wasn't coming back, there was some concern there already. You want to have returning players. We have seen in NCAA, individual basketball, over the last few years, one of the biggest factors that leads to team success is consistency on your roster. And Memphis has quite literally none of that. So there was already concern there. And then you just have these other factors now in play. Now, some of it doesn't have anything to directly do with the Memphis basketball program. And that's why I think that cautious optimism still is prevailing heading into the season. But it is, man. It has been a tough offseason. I don't know if it's been I don't know if I'm ready to say it's the worst one, but there is. But we might look back in, you know, if we look up in January, we could say, oh, man, you know, January, February, March, we could look back at this offseason and say maybe that was the worst offseason because it was death by paper cuts. But for now, I think it's been a tough one, new cycle-wise, but I still think that they can overcome it with the talent they have and you know, Penny right. and Ed Scott. I'm trying to maintain faith in the face of adversity.
Now, I know some of this will, you know, inevitably be met with, you know, hindsight and how things turned out. I will say this. I think in Penny Hardaway's going on seven seasons, I think this is the least confident I've been in one of his rosters having a bunch of success. Just because I think there's a lot of things that are contributing to where this team could fall short. The front court is thin.
Sure.
You're betting on a lot of different guys to be able to step up, Aaron Bradshaw namely. If they can't run into the season with Sincere Parker, you're losing probably what was going to be a bulk of your scoring.
Yes.
Can Julius Thedford step into that role coming from Western Kentucky? I know he's coming back to the city. He seems to have a lot of good things going for him with his skill set. He's still very young. He's going to be a sophomore. But, like, the level of confidence I have as opposed to rosters past at this time in the calendar, I think this is the least confident I have been in any Penny Hardaway roster.
I think for me,
that doesn't mean they will be bad.
Yeah.
That, like, still, after all of this, I would probably bet on them being top three in the AAC more than being outside of the top three.
Sure.
But I'm talking about me and looking at this roster from a confidence level. I'm not there. It is not a complete roster. It does have some talent on it, but I don't know how that's going to translate in the slightest.
I think what's really difficult about it is you can't really have any sort of confidence in either direction. It's just a giant question mark. Every player on this roster is a question mark. You have no idea. Like, with the transfers that were on the team last season, you knew they were going to be good.
People had questions about PJ, but I didn't
really.
There were some questions about, okay, bigger role, more
right.
players
it was
around
more
him.
Like,
what's that going to look like?
Can he shoot a three?
Yeah,
rather
well,
than, like, is he going to be able
was,
to perform?
I think the question was more step up in competition.
Right.
Or not step up in competition, but step up in competition on the team.
Sure.
And, you know, is he going to get as many shots? Is he going to average the same amount of points? Like, that was the question. But I always knew, okay, PJ Haggerty is the lead guard. That's your Kendrick Davis, if you will, of this team.
And you knew Tyrese Hunter, veteran guy,
yeah.
defense first.
Right.
You knew at the end of the day, you were at least going to have.
And you had a familiar face in Musa Cisse. You know what to expect from him.
Even though I don't think he had a great season, Nick Jourdain was at least around.
You had some consistency
with him. You were able to at least hang your hat on, okay, worst case scenario, they've got PJ Haggerty. But then we know that they have Tyrese Hunter. We were really excited about Dane Danger because we knew what he was able to do in the minutes that he had previously. So we had some confidence that, okay, Dane, he might be able to be a factor for you. I just have no idea with this roster. And unfortunately, one of the guys that you had some confidence in is now in a very serious legal situation.
Yes.
That has to play out. And we have to see what happens there. And then it's kind of like, I don't know where to look. Because
I said the other day, I think the two guys that I need to look at, let's just assume the Sincere Parker thing bleeds into the season and he's maybe not a part of this team. Let's just assume that. Two guys I'm looking at are Curtis Givens and Julius Thedford as guys that I just, like, if this team's going to be successful, I think those guys have to step into big roles.
And then you're like, can Doug McDaniel have a big year?
Could, of course. Could,
that's
to me, but that's my problem. He's the given. And how given is that? Like, how overly confident? Like, he's not PJ Haggerty. He's not Kendrick Davis. Like, you don't have that level of confidence in this kid. So, like, if he's your given, how much can you really latch on and predict success for this team? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing I'm trying to come to grips with.
It's one of those rosters where if you told me that you had a time machine and you went to March and you said Memphis ran through the American. I would say that makes sense. And then if you also told me
Memphis finished fifth,
I'm not gonna say. Let's say that they finish third. I'd say that also makes sense. And I don't have confidence in either one, and that is unfortunate at this part of the season. I think that Penny and that staff are doing everything that they can. They got these players on campus. And again, I'm not faulting Penny and Memphis for what happened. They made a very real effort to keep to make sure Dane could come back, to make sure PJ Haggerty stayed. They are doing the best with what they were given.
I want to be clear. Given everything that has transpired this offseason, what they have on this roster took a Herculean effort on behalf
100%.
Of Nolan Smith when he was still here and Penny Hardaway. I want to be very clear about that. Like I give pluses. I give check marks to the job they did considering the circumstances.
And that's why, you know, I also think that credit, like Curtis Givens, I am praying he can be one of those tentpole guys.
Yeah.
You just, even if it's one dude, you just need somebody that's been here for more than one season. And listen, I know that people right now are saying, well, what about Ashton Hardaway? I am not counting him. I'm not. It was a different program when he was here. It was a different program when Ashton Hardaway was last year.
Yeah. We'll see, though. All right, now in some solid news that has to do with Memphis basketball, David Jones Garcia made first team all summer league, and he was rewarded by the San Antonio Spurs with a two-way contract. His numbers were pretty damn impressive. They were very good during summer league. 21.6 points per game, 6 rebounds, right around 4 assists.
He was excellent.
He was right around 1.5 steals per game, which is something you really need to see from him. How's he coming along on the defensive end of the floor? The playmaking has definitely shown through. The shot making definitely showed through. He was 52.7% from the field, shot some threes, got them up, made them. But like the steal numbers are pretty big. He was definitely giving an effort on the defensive end. I don't know how he breaks in necessarily with the Spurs rotation or this Spurs team, this roster, but really cool for him to get another two-way after sort of what's been a pretty up and down early G League NBA career for him, right? He was with the 76ers. They waived him, and he's been sort of trying to find his spot. He definitely found a landing spot this offseason, and that's tough to do. It's really tough to do considering the circumstance.
Yeah, credit to him. He made some improvements, most notably, I think, with his efficiency and his turnovers, and it led to another opportunity for him. I will say, in the Spurs' official statement, one thing that made me chuckle a little bit is they listed him as 6'5". It's like, we sure about that? So it's like
we saw his combine numbers 2 years ago.
He was
6'3", you know, and some change.
Listen, tell your story. Yeah. Tell your story. I will say, I think that there is a path to him maybe ending up on this Spurs roster, because when we talk about the biggest thing he's lacking is really defense.
Yeah.
Well, guess what the Spurs have almost too much of? Defense on their perimeter. If you need a guy that you're saying, hey, when you go in, your job is to fill it up, maybe David Jones Garcia could be that guy for them. I think that of all of the teams in the league, the Spurs are one of the best fits for
him. You think
so? If there is a fit, because they don't need him to play defense. He would just go in and be like, just score. Just go in and score.
That's a hell of a way to sort of add context. If there is a fit, that's tough.
Well, it's because he is a tweener. It's a difficult, because what position? Is he a shooting guard? Is he a small forward?
Yeah, like, I guess I did say at the beginning of this conversation, I don't know how he fits in with the Spurs. I think we've said this from day one. When he decided to forego the rest of his eligibility going to the NBA draft. I just don't know if there's like a perfect fit for him in the NBA, but the fact that he's finding ways to shine, finding ways to make himself valuable enough to a team to get a two-way, that's a good sign that he's moving in the right direction.
Right.
But like, yeah, I guess I should have revised my statement. Not necessarily breaking into the Spurs roster, but breaking into any roster, I think, has always been an uphill battle for David Jones Garcia.
I think so. I think that the Spurs, though, make sense. They make sense. They don't need him to play defense. If he ever gets minutes on the Spurs, it will literally be go in there and score. And we know that he can absolutely do that. It's just everything else you kind of have question marks about. But again, he would be kind of surrounded by guys who could help those areas.
And real quick on the Summer League, Kyle Filipowski averaged 29.3 points per game in Summer League.
He did.
My God. I knew he played well. Nearly 30 points per game in Summer League's damn impressive. I don't care if it's Summer League or not. He ended up winning MVP, though. He should get a pretty – I mean, he played a lot last year with the Jazz. I think he's going to break through in that rotation pretty heavily this year.
Yeah. Another guy that was really good was Neat Clifford.
Yeah.
He was really good.
You sold on him?
I think the archetype for him is, could he be like he another was one Josh of my, Hart type of guy?
He was one of – like if the Grizzlies happened to trade down, which I didn't think they were going to do, that was one of the guys that I figured could be sort of in that conversation.
I believe – our top three was Colin Murray, Boyle, Cedric Coward, and then Neat Clifford.
Cedric Coward, top of my list. Always.
He was top of yours. Colin Murray Boyles was at the top of mine. And then I think I even
threw in a Liam McNeely. And you
did
of,
you?
Yeah. You sort of looked at me sideways on that one. You I gave like me a little Neek. Bit of a side eye.
I remember Jeff liked Neek.
I think Jeff was.